As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Good news, everyone. The sun is out, outdoor socialising is back in England, and best of all, Tottenham aren't playing for 2 weeks. We're trying to make the most of this break by trying to get our heads out of the never-ending 2020-2021 season and looking ahead to next year. What will Spurs look like? Which of these players would you keep? Who would you sell to make money? And who would you have in charge? My name's Jack Pitbrook, you're listening to the View from the Lane podcast. I'm joined, as always, by James Moore and a special guest... The Rock back for WrestleMania, it's Charlie Eccleshare. Charlie, hey, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
Yeah, great to have you back. Are you missing covering Tottenham's slow descent down the league? Because they were quite good when you were here, and now they're rubbish.
Yeah, I've had quite a lot of messages about that like it coincided, me going off, and it all... I think just after I left was when they went on that really bad run of like 4 defeats in 5, so... That was a bit strange. Although I don't think it's necessarily... I think now it's kind of levelling off a bit and they're moving back up. I don't think it's a totally lost cause. But it has...
The form team in the Premier League.
Yeah, exactly. I've always felt, even in that really bad period, that top four was still possible. I know I was really pushing top four in the first half of the season. But I have...
You were pushing the title in the first half of the season, Charlie. Come back here now and pretend you were saying top
four. And revise it. Yeah, I did think title was a possibility. In those heady days of the City win, the Arsenal win. When I went off, they kind of been more... Like, that was, what, early mid-January. They probably still weren't like miles off the title. But by that point, obviously, we'd accepted that probably wasn't going to happen. But yeah, I've always... Even since then, I've still thought top four. And I still think top four now. I think Leicester... I know it sounds weird because they've got quite a buffer, but they've got, was it Chelsea, Spurs, United to play, I think, in their last three games. And just given what happened last season, I do think maybe they might have a similar thing. So I don't think it's totally out of reach. But it has been strange. I mean, yeah, some weird games in that period. Obviously, the Europa League exit kind of foremost among them. But yeah, who knows? I mean, now with not having to play that Thursday-Sunday routine, it might open it up a bit.
James, I take it you don't share Charlie's confidence about fourth?
The tone of this podcast is totally different with Charlie, isn't it? He's so positive. For the last like 3 months, it's just been like, unrelenting negativity for me and Jack.
The pure misery podcast.
Suddenly it's, oh, actually, Mourinho's not completely useless, so I might do all right. My biggest concern is that Leicester have had this kind of run of matches where Madison and Barnes have been missing. And they've still, I think, taken sort of 10 points in 4 games or whatever it was. And that was the point that I thought maybe they would sort of slip up a bit, but actually they've sort of done quite well to manage their way through that little run. So, and obviously the fact they've gone out of Europe as well, I think will probably work in their favour. I mean, if Spurs are sort of within touching distance by those last 3 games, then maybe, but I think they've got a lot of quite nice games between now and then Leicester, so I would be surprised if Spurs can cut too deep into that gap, sadly. I sort of think Chelsea are more likely...
Well, because they've got Champions League and FA Cup and all that.
Yeah, they've got a lot on their plate. And I always think like when a team goes on quite a long run without losing, like if they suddenly lose a game, then it all can kind of fall away if the pressure's on. So, I mean, you know, you've seen that happen so many times before. But obviously, the first thing would be to actually lose a game first.
But James, you are, as well as having the same initials, you and Mourinho do share that, what the Germans call purposeful pessimism, whereby you often talk down, you'll talk down Spurs' chances, he'll be like, oh, Son's going to be out for ages, in the hope that you're kind of reverse tempting fate. I think deep down you're more confident about Spurs than you let on. If they win their first game back and they go level with Chelsea or whatever it is, are you telling me you wouldn't start to believe a little bit that it's possible?
I could picture them winning like all of the games against kind of the bottom 12 or whatever they've got left. But it's Man United. I mean, actually, Everton away, I could kind of see maybe they'd get a result there. But, you know, United, Leicester. There's another one against someone half decent, isn't there? I can't think who it is.
United, though.
I mean, we've got Villa again.
Villa, yeah. United will be in between the two Europa League ones, won't they? So that might help. Whereas Spurs would have had the full week. Everton, I mean, Spurs should have won that FA Cup game comfortably.
Yeah, Everton haven't been particularly good at home, have they? So, I mean, I don't think that's impossible. Yeah, I think they would need like a near faultless run, I think, to get in top four, probably. And I'm just not convinced that they're going to sort of win 7 out of 9 or whatever. I'd be delighted to be wrong.
You win either way.
You can subscribe to The Athletic UK right now for £3.99 a month for 6 months. That's 40% off the full price of a subscription. You'll enjoy great analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers around, as well as ad-free versions of all of our podcasts. So go to theathletic.com/SpursPod to take advantage of this 40% discount. That's theathletic.com/SpursPod. I think for this, we're not going to assume too much about what might happen over the end of the season for the course of this exercise, but we are just going to run through the squad and decide if you guys think that Tottenham should keep or get rid of these players so we can try and just build up a sense of what the squad next year will look like. Obvious place to start is in goal with the captain, Hugo Lloris. He's got 1 year left in his contract. He's been linked with a return to France and going to Paris Saint-Germain after 9 years at Tottenham. His form, I think, this year has been not standout bad, but maybe not as good as he used to be a few years ago. James, would you keep him? Would you let him go?
They definitely need to have like a plan in place, like a sort of succession plan for when he does go. I mean, I think the fact that he's only got 1 year on his contract is probably an indication they wouldn't get massive money. I mean, if PSG turn up and offer 25 million quid for him, which I just can't say they would do. I mean, they've got a good keeper anyway, right? In the Costa Rican lad.
Keylor Navas.
Say his name. Keylor Navas. Yep, him. The Costa Rican lad. He could just do a swap deal. He's probably like a year younger, isn't he? I imagine. He can't be as old as Lloris, surely.
I doubt that.
So that does seem like a weird one, unless it's just a pot sort of statement thing to get his players in the dressing room, maybe. I just can't see a situation where they're going to offer the kind of money that make that worthwhile. So I think in an ideal world, and I don't want to skip ahead to the next one, which is obviously Joe Hart, you want to kind of have like the next keeper in to kind of compete with Lloris with a view to kind of, you know, superseding him next season, like over the course of the season, like they did with Lloris and Friedel. And if that's the case, I don't really see the need for Joe Hart. So I know I've skipped ahead, but you do kind of need to do that sometimes.
So, I
guess to answer your question, I would keep Lloris and bring in another goalkeeper, a younger goalkeeper. I don't know who that is. That's not what you're asking, is it?
No. If you've got an opinion, I'd like to hear it, but it's not the point.
I'm not interested in English goalkeepers.
Yeah, fair enough.
Like, since Paul Robinson, I don't want Spurs to have an English goalkeeper because it's too much. Like, they get good, then they get an England team, then they make a mistake, then it all just goes. And you've seen it with every English goalkeeper since, I don't know who, Seaman, probably inclusive, actually. Pickford even, you know, had a great World Cup and it looked like he was going to kind of be mentally resilient enough to not have these problems. And then, sure enough, over the last sort of 2 years, it's kind of crumbled, and even at Everton, his place is under threat. So I wouldn't want an English goalkeeper. And I know people are talking about Pope and Henderson, who are both very good. I just don't want those complications. So some young foreign goalkeeper, which I know, again, for kind of squad quota reasons, is complicated. But I don't know who it is, but that's what I want.
Like David Raya at Brentford, who's always linked with Premier League clubs, who's very good with his feet, apparently. Yeah. But yeah, I agree with James on. I kind of feel Lloris, I don't know, it feels like if you've got like massive structural problems with your house, Lloris to me doesn't feel like a, you know, that feels like upgrading your TV or something. Like, I don't think Lloris is the big problem that Spurs have at the moment. I think he's fine. I can't imagine, you know, PSG or anyone coming in for much money, you know, a player of that age with a year left. So I would hold on to him. I think that's sensible, yeah, to bring in someone to kind of learn, hopefully, you know, play in the Carabao Cup, FA Cup, and whatever European competition Spurs are in, and kind of do it that way. But yeah, to me, Lloris doesn't feel like a pressing one. The other thing is Gazzaniga. I mean, I know he's sort of been forgotten about, but I guess he would go as well. But like, I would probably have him as my number two over Joe Hart, but that's probably a discussion for another time.
Yeah, I guess my view on this is that at some point in the next few years, Spurs are going to have to replace Lloris, but I just think they've got too much on their plate. Like, they might have to make an incredibly expensive and difficult decision regarding their manager this year. The last thing they need this summer is to get rid of the man who's been in goal for them for the last 9 years and is the captain, and yeah, then spend, you know, much more money than they would get for Lloris on a new keeper, whoever that is. So I think we're kind of unanimously for keeping Lloris. The Hart dog, I'm kind of sensing a bit of reluctance to keep the Hart dog from you guys, which I must say is disappointing. I'm very much pro the Hart dog. I think he's a legend. He's played all right, I think, in his 10 games so far. James is putting a face. You don't agree?
That's generous. He's done fine.
He's done fine.
I mean, yeah. He's not made any kind of like Danny Baker level blunders, but he has let in quite a few goals that you think maybe a top keeper wouldn't.
There was that game at LASK, wasn't there, where he was pretty at fault, yeah, for a couple of the goals.
Maybe, but he's a free transfer backup keeper. Like, he's not a top keeper, or he's not a top keeper anymore, unfortunately, although he was in his time. But also, you're forgetting his, like, being mates with all the players and, yeah, being fun in the dressing,
yeah,
room, and, like, giving big hugs to them when they come off in a Europa League game, all that classic stuff.
You do have a limit on the number of foreign players you can have.
Yeah.
So, like, to have your backup, if he's never going to play or hardly ever going to play, then there's definitely merit to it being an English guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he feels more sort of hype man than number two goalkeeper, but he seems to have done that job pretty well. The memorable cricket game.
Who can forget? Yeah,
he's made some important contributions. The Instagram apology, like, it's been great.
Yeah, that was legendary stuff. So we're keeping the hot dog then.
Well, I guess in that sort of hype man role, but you might want to have also a number two goalkeeper to sort of play the games.
As long as he's homegrown for UEFA. That said, if Spurs aren't in Europe next year, then it won't matter. They can go and sign a foreign keeper in it. And
I think we had to kind of do this assuming Spurs are at least
I think so, yeah.
Because otherwise this is too...
But I think the assumption has to be from this point that Spurs will be playing in Europe next season in some form, even though I think the chance of them being in the Champions League next year, not impossible, but low. So we're keeping the hot dog. So now let's move on to the defence. Let's do centre-backs first, then come on to the full-backs. Let's start with Davinson Sanchez. James, you're pulling a face. You must...
Stop trying to expose me.
Sorry.
For pulling faces. I kind of feel like I've defended this guy quite a lot over the last few years, and in particular this season, but I don't think we've seen the kind of development that you would want to see of a centre-back. And he has played a lot as,
yeah,
well. And I think there might be a sort of a slight misconception that he's always been on the bench, but actually he's played loads of football in the last 4 years. He's one that I think if you got a good bid, I think, you know, if someone bids 25 million quid, and I know people will be listening to that thinking 25 million quid for Sanchez, but that is the kind of fee that someone, you know, someone in some rubbish league like Serie A would probably bid. I think if they got that kind of bid for him, and you know, I think he would be good. If he played every week in a settled team in the right system, I think he could be good, but I'm just not sure with all the chopping and changing that seems to go on quite regularly at Spurs, it's going to be quite right. I think like a fresh start would actually probably be quite good. Like, I could see him going to like Milan and being quite good and it kind of feeling like a bit of a mistake, but you know, in the sort of Kirikes, Fazio sort of vein. Do you know what I mean? And 25 million quid is like, you know, the modern equivalent of sort of 8 million quid like 5 years ago, which is sort of what they got for those two. So he'd probably be one I'd get shot of, particularly because they're, you know, and again, I don't want to go down the list, but I think there are a couple of younger ones who are probably a slightly better bet in developmental terms.
Well, that's the thing. You look at the centre-backs and you've got Tanganga who can kind of, he is a centre-back, really. That's where he's played, but he can kind of play everywhere. So, I mean, sorry to jump ahead. Yeah, you're definitely keeping him. But then you've got that block of four, really, Sanchez, Dyer, Alderweireld and Rodon. And you're going to, assuming you want to bring someone in, which I think 99% of Spurs fans would, there's no point having five out-and-out centre-backs as well as Tanganga. So you're thinking, well, you've got to get rid of... I think you'd probably get rid of one of them. Roden, you're obviously not going to get rid of him. I don't really see the point of getting rid of Alderweireld. I mean, you're not really going to get much of a fee, and he's a useful, very experienced leader to have around. So really, it then comes down to Dier or Sanchez. And I think of those two... It's a tricky one on balance, but it would kind of depend on who you could get more money for. I mean, there's also that homegrown thing, which I know is a big preoccupation of a lot of supporters as well. And there is a logic to that because there are those rules in place. I mean, Dier, you might be able to get more money for because of the whole English premium. So I think you might have to do it that way. I mean, Dier and Sanchez, not a huge amount to choose between them. And I guess it depends on who the guy you're bringing in is, because if you're bringing in a really pacey, centre-back and kind of sweep in behind, then that reduces your need for Sanchez. If you're bringing in someone who is more close to Dier stylistically, then that changes the picture. So I guess it slightly depends on the sort of centre-back that Mourinho has in mind. And I think some fans probably would want, the kind of really commanding guy to come in and help usher Sanchez through. And in which case, that probably reduces the need for Dier. But I think it would ultimately come down to who you think you can get more value for.
Yeah, I think I've always thought of myself as a defender of Sanchez, but it's there's no getting past the fact that he's not really any better now than he was when Spurs signed him 4 years ago. I think he's been okay this year. He's played, 11 games out of the last 13? He's basically been first choice for the last month or two. But I agree with you that I think it might be they could make a bit of money there. You could definitely see him going to a team in La Liga. He's a kind of Valencia, Villarreal, Atletico Madrid type player. Maybe I could be persuaded to sell him, although, like you say, it depends who's coming in. So let's put Sanchez in the sale column, assuming they can get money for him, although it would be slightly sad to see him go. But just because when they bought him, I thought, here's a guy they're going to sell to Barcelona for 100 million in 4 years' time, and obviously that's not the case. Next up, Eric Dier. 3 years left, big new contract last year. Not had a great season, if we're honest. I don't think he's been very good. He's lost his place a bit. But I also, at the same time, I think he's a very good person to have around. Like, he's been there for 7 years. He's a big glue in the dressing room, multilingual, good leadership, plays in different positions. Seems to get on pretty well with Mourinho. I think I'd probably keep Dier. I think he's a good person to have, even though I don't think he's had a great season.
If you're not in Europe, and again, I know we can't have this conversation for every single position, but if you're not in Europe, I don't think you want five centre-backs. And I think we're all of the opinion that they should sign at least one centre-back. If they're not in Europe and they sell Sanchez, and they're probably going to want to sell Dier and sign a centre-back, they're probably going to want to sell Dier as well, right? Because we're also all in agreement that, and tell me if I'm wrong, Jack, but this is what Charlie's just said, that we would all want Alderweireld, Roden and Tanganga to stay.
I'm not sure I would want Alderweireld to stay.
Really?
He's not playing well, I don't think, and he's really old, and he's got 2 years left, and I don't think he gets on especially well with Mourinho.
Interesting.
I don't think they get much money for him.
I mean, there are two solutions there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they get a huge amount of money for him, but if I was keeping one out of Dier and Toby, I think I might want to keep Dier. He's younger and he'll last for longer. He's got more time left in his contract.
I don't actually think Dier's had a worse season than Alderweireld. No, you say that, actually. I mean, that's kind of obviously the case, isn't it? In a weird way. I mean, Alderweireld has been more steady more recently, but I think if you kind of averaged it out over the whole season, I think you'd probably say Dier had done at least
Dier's problem is that he's one of those defenders who's got a habit of making really bad-looking mistakes. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, he'll just do and think, God, what do you... Whereas Toby doesn't do that in the same way, but Toby is just really slow, which means that some... And I also think Toby's been in kind of gradual decline for about 3 years now.
Yeah, the problem is, I mean, he was one who they kind of needed to get rid of, just let his contract go and accept that. Giving him that big, long new contract now puts him in a bit of a bind with him. But yeah. I think realistically, assuming they're in Europe, you want your four centre-backs and Tanganga probably, in which case I think you do just get rid of one. And then, as I said before, I think it comes down to Dier or Sanchez. I don't have strong views. I think it would depend on the interest. I think Dier's been fine. And I think, he is, he's been there a while. I'd be perfectly fine, to keep him.
Also, I think to be completely realistic, you can't and shouldn't change
loads. No, exactly.
Like, I don't, like, I don't think you should be going like selling like three centre backs and bringing two in or whatever. I don't know, some people probably want that to happen, but I think you know, this isn't like someone playing FIFA. This is real life, and like these.
This
are
is serious.
Into it. This is real. What we're doing here. This is real. Yeah. What we're doing now.
This hypothetical sale or not.
And you know, I'd like to completely like shift the whole dressing room out. And you know, the stuff you say about Dyer, Jack, is a really good point about how like central a figure he is there with like the different social groups. Like to take people like that out of a dressing room, you're not just like removing a player who's had an iffy couple of months. You're taking out a bloke who's kind of been central to so many things in that dressing room. And I can see logic. So I think are we kind of now in agreement that we're selling Sanchez
and, to keep Dyer,
signing someone else.
So Alderweireld, 2 years left. Well, I wouldn't be against selling him. At the same time, how much money?
£8 million to Ajax.
Yeah, how much money would they realistically get for him?
Oh, Benfica, actually.
West Ham, like West Ham actually seem a bit better now, but
no, he can't do that.
You know, they haven't been averse to signing.
Yeah, a few years ago, Pellegrini would have been swooping
Arbeloa, Zabaleta, Evra. Yeah. Like they don't mind a sort of 30-something Premier League centre back who was brilliant 5 years ago.
He's a man of integrity.
Okay, so you're ruling out Toby Alderweireld to West Ham. Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, that's gonna be on that weird website that takes things I say in this podcast. Athletic journalist denies West Ham swoop.
I don't think he's very... Yeah, that's the thing, is I just don't think he's very sellable, although at the same time, I...
£8 million to Ajax, mate. Yeah. That's the most believable thing that's going to be said on this podcast.
That is probably true.
If they could get him, I mean, I think that'd be pretty good. I think if they came in with that sort of money. But I think you're right, James, about like, obviously in this hypothetical world that we're doing here, it lends itself to just being like, yeah, sell. And then you come to the end of it and you're like, fuck, we're talking about selling like seven first team players.
And signing 15 players.
Yeah. Obviously, as you say, if you're playing a computer game is great. But in reality, if you were to do that, you'd have to accept a season or two of kind of transition, which I don't think many would be up for, especially given that the last year has felt reasonably transitional.
Okay, so we've got him. Which column am I putting him? Let's just put him in a cell. Okay, keep. Toby is keep. Joe Roden, I think, probably has to be a keep. He's pretty good.
The question there would be on whether you think he'd benefit from a loan. But I guess as well, you know, that depends on who they brought in, who they
sent
out.
That's the European thing, I think, as well. I think if they're in Europe, I think you keep Roden, but if they're not, and there are a few games, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, that has been a big oversight, actually, hasn't it? Him not being able to play in Europa League games has been pretty massive. And that was, you know, that was because they signed him in the end of the summer window, but after the deadline had gone. Which I think has stunted his development a bit. If you think, he'd be six, eight games better off, which is quite big for a player of that sort of age.
Yeah, it's a shame that he's only been able to play so rarely. And I know he was a beneficiary coming back in at Villa, but I think he was kind of playing that game sort of to prove a point, really, from Mourinho's standpoint. After having not played Roden so long, and I think that was also Roden's first start in a back four, having only previously started in a back five for Tottenham. But yeah, I'm a big fan of Roden. I think he's a really good player. He's got to be there next season, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's really good. I mean, he made that mistake against Liverpool, didn't he? And against Chelsea, he was really good for most of the game, and then nearly gifted him a goal at the end. But yeah, I've liked what I've seen from him.
So that all kind of moves us on to the next question, Charlie. Rosen versus Tanganga. Who is there, a pecking order? Do you do the same thing? Different approach with different players? What do you reckon?
Yeah, Tanganga is an interesting one because he is so versatile. So you'd think he is well set to kind of start accumulating more minutes. I mean, I think he's played really well whenever he's come in. You know, he's played at right back a couple of times, and I think done a pretty decent job there. It is strange because this is a guy who's always a centre back coming through the ranks. Mourinho said he sees him very much as a fullback. I mean, there was talk, you know, there was interest from Premier League clubs, West Brom among them, for a loan move in January. I think if, you know, he's definitely, in my mind anyway, got a first team future at Spurs. If a good loan came in for next season, and again, depending on the level of squad, depending on the competitions that Spurs are in, I don't think that would necessarily be a disaster. But yeah, I think ideally he would be at Tottenham in their first team, and, you know, through the Europa League and the Cups, you know, getting a decent number of games next season. He's also been really unlucky this year because in the same way that Roden missed that first half of the season, Europa League, and he was also signed after the Cups and so missed all of that kind of game time. Tanganga was injured for much of that. He's had loads of kind of niggling injuries that meant he didn't play so much in the first half. So I think I would try and keep him, but if it looked like the squad was just too big and they were too well stocked in those areas, then, you know, I think a loan at a decent Premier League club could also benefit him as well.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Let's move on to the left backs. Let's start off with Danny Rose, who I think is the easiest one. He's out of contract. He's been at Spurs a long time. He's been a great player for Spurs, I think. But clearly he's fallen out with the hierarchy, the manager. He hasn't played for Spurs for quite a while. Done nothing really at all this season. I think this is the end of Danny Rose at Tottenham, unless one of you is going to tell me that you'd offer him a new contract.
A bumper new deal for Danny Rose, I think, is the only way forward. No, probably not. I think...
he's not going to stay, is he? I mean, there's no way he's going to stay. And I mean, I think you've got good options in that position. I mean, no, Ben Davies isn't everyone's cup of tea, but I think he's another guy who's a pretty good element of that group.
Yeah.
In terms of like his personality and mentality. So I think I'm assuming no one's going to want to sell Reguilón. And I think Davies is then a pretty good backup.
Yeah.
Particularly, I don't know, they've not really ended up playing that back three too many times this season, but he has obviously played in that position a couple of times.
Yeah. Let's not have a Jamie Redknapp, Roy Keane. Let's not fall out over Reguilón. I mean, yeah, I think I think Spurs' left back stable is amongst the best in the league. You know, you've Danny Rose notwithstanding. You know, you've got Reguilón, who is brilliant first choice. And I think Ben Davies is as good a second choice left back as you can hope to have. You know, he's a guy who he's very consistent. He can also play as a left sided centre back. I don't think you want to do anything to those two. And apologies, Jack, if I'm jumping ahead because he may be in the midfield category, but you've got Sessegnon coming back as well, who I think, you know, we'd all like to see given a chance. You know, he can play as a left wing back. You know, Mourinho spoke about last year of him ultimately ending up as a left back. You know, that remains to be seen. But yeah, I think they're really well stocked on that left side.
Yeah, I would definitely. I think left back is kind of the easiest section that we've had to deal with. Like, I would obviously keep Reguilón. I think he's a great player. I'll probably go back to Real Madrid at some point, but not yet. Davies, I would definitely keep. I think Davies is as you guys say, Davies is kind of a dream backup. He's consistent, he's versatile, he's professional, he's played for Spurs for years. I know some people get wound up with him because he's not a different player, but he is who he is and he's really good at it. So I'm definitely pro Ben Davies. And then Sessegnon is a fantastically talented player. I think he's doing really well in Germany on his loan at the moment. Does he have a future as part of a first team managed by Jose Mourinho? The evidence suggests probably not. But I would, you know, he's still got time left in his contract and I'd like to see him. I'm sure he will be a Spurs player at some point, but whether or not that's next year is kind of connected to a bigger set of questions. So right backs is a slightly more interesting one. Serge Aurier, Matt Doherty, you can't really take them in isolation. Serge Aurier has 1 year left on his contract. He hasn't played that much recently. Obviously had a big falling out with Mourinho after the Liverpool game back in January. Whereas Matt Doherty has 3 years left but hasn't really performed. What would you guys do? Sell both, keep both, sell one?
I think it's another one where you're sort of at the mercy of the bids you get, really. I mean, I know there's been a bit of talk of Aurier going, even though he's only got that 1 year left. I mean, I think if they got a good bid for him, I would let him go. But if they didn't, I would definitely keep him to be kind of in the rotation in that position. Because despite that error against Liverpool, which I think is actually a bit harsh anyway, I think he's actually had a pretty good season, despite the kind of relentless criticism some people on some podcasts have given him before. So assuming there wasn't like a, you know, similar to Lloris, assuming there wasn't a big bid coming in for him, I'd probably hold on to him. And if you can move Doherty on one way or another and bring in another. I mean, that is definitely a position right back where I think you're trying to sign like as close to an elite player as you can for that position. I think that's definitely one position where they need to do that. So if they can sell Doherty on and bring in, you know, one third of what, or a quarter even of what they need to spend on that right back, then so be it. But that should definitely be a priority position, I think.
Yeah, it's definitely an area. I think in an ideal world, you would have a kind of Reguilon equivalent on that right hand side, which obviously, I mean, Aurier, yeah, I've been a big defender of Aurier all season. He's another one actually who slightly in the past couple of months, you know, hasn't been as consistent. There's Tanganga as well, who can play at right back, and I think at the moment is probably the most informed right back. I mean, Doherty's an interesting one, isn't he? Because it does show kind of how quickly things change and how challenging player recruitment is. Because that was a player who last summer, when Spurs signed him for 15 million, I think it was, I think most people thought that's a really smart signing. You're getting an established Premier League fullback or wing back. He'll slot in, hit the ground running. He's not reacclimatizing to a different league, and it just hasn't really worked out for him. I think actually, like, the move from wing back to right back has taken probably more readjustment than we thought. I mean, with those two, kind of similar to the situation saying with Sanchez, yeah, if you got a decent offer, I think it would be strange to say no. I'm just not sure you're going to get that. I mean, Aurier, he's in the same situation as Lloris with only 1 year left, so I can't really see, you know, a huge offer, but you might get something because he has had interest in the past. Realistically, if the right offer came in for either of them, you know, I think you'd probably have to take that pretty seriously, and the hope is you bring in someone to replace them, or, you know, it would be a leap of faith, but Mourinho might say, okay, yeah, we're going to have, you know, an experienced operator in Aurier and Doherty and Tanganga, and those are going to be our two right backs, and we're going to hope that Tanganga really pushes on and becomes that sort of right back. He's not as attacking, he's not as naturally, you know, Reguilon plays kind of like a winger. He looks that good going forward. Obviously, Tanganga is more of a converted centre back, but, you know, they might want to do that sort of inverted thing that they used to do on the other side with when it was Davis and Aurier. So, yeah, I think either one of those two, I don't think you'd say like you have to hold on to at all costs by any means.
I do wonder if Doherty, maybe given his stock is so low at the moment, if you can like stick him out on loan to Crystal Palace or whoever. Hope he has a good season at a sort of mid-table or worse Premier League club, and then kind of see his value kind of shoot back up again. That might not be the worst solution, because for whatever reason, it feels like it isn't quite working. Whether or not it's that kind of minor tactical thing, we're not quite sure. But I don't know. That might be another option. Maybe.
That sounds about right to me. Let's say Aurier out. Sorry, keep hold of Aurier because you might as well. But then Doherty out on a loan or a buy,
and then a new right back to Crystal Palace.
Specifically to Crystal Palace. Okay, now it's time for midfielders. So let's start with Harry Winks, who I think is an interesting one. He's got 3 years left. He was obviously a hugely important player under Pochettino. This season, he's had a very difficult season. He wasn't even on the bench for Spurs' last game in the Premier League at Aston Villa. James, we've defended Harry Winks a lot on this podcast. I assume that you would rather keep him.
Yeah, I don't see why you would sell him, really. I mean, you know, this isn't the reason to keep him, but one, there is that homegrown thing. And he is kind of double bag homegrown, isn't he? Because he's club homegrown as well, which is more of a thing in the European competitions. He's just a good player. I'm sort of staggered by some of the stuff that I see and hear said about him, because, you know, and he hasn't had a good season, but he has also been in and out of the team, which is clearly a factor, but I think particularly in central midfield. And this is a player who kind of early last season we were looking at. Before that Bayern Munich game, I remember us having a conversation in the office, Jack, about how he had played against all of the top teams in Europe,
yeah,
and always looked really, really good. He played against Barcelona, Real Madrid, Juventus, Dortmund, and been absolutely brilliant in all of those games, and not looked at all out of place against the best teams in the Champions League. And yet, you know, he had a bad game in that in that Bayern game, and maybe that knocked his confidence a bit because he's kind of been a bit up and down, maybe to be generous since then. So I don't think he's a player you should be kind of jettisoning at this stage. Well, his stock is so low, it seems strange to me that you would do that. I think he's one you persist with. I think Michael Cox wrote a piece when Mourinho took over at Spurs saying Winks would be one of the players who just, his face just wasn't going to fit in a Mourinho system. And actually, to be honest, in the first year or so, he probably played quite a lot more than we thought he would. But clearly, you know, it feels like he is on the fringes again now for whatever reason. And I'm not sure that's necessarily entirely football related. If it was me, I would keep him. But if Mourinho is the manager, I'm not sure that necessarily will happen.
Yeah, and I suppose the one argument you can make for selling Winks is if Mourinho stays and if Mourinho isn't going to play him and if Spurs need to make money, then Winks, yeah, they can, yeah, probably, yeah, make more money from selling Winks than from selling plenty of other players. And it's also probably worth saying that, well, if Winks is going to miss out on the Euros this year, which I'm sure he is, and he's going to want to get back in the England team for the World Cup in November 2022, and he's not going to do that by not playing for Mourinho's Spurs, but he might do that if he goes and plays really well for, I don't know, Everton, Villa, Saints, you know, West Ham, that sort of team.
18 months, 2 years ago, people were talking about Manchester City and Manchester United wanted to sign.
Exactly, so, they certainly were, yeah. They really were. And I don't think that was illegitimate either because of how, you know, how good he was playing and everything else. Like, City and United did really like him. And maybe they still would. I personally, I'd keep Winks, but I do understand that if Mourinho stays, there is a strong argument for selling Winks.
Yeah, I've said before, like with Winks, I do find it, as James touched on, I do find the kind of hostility towards him quite strange, given you're talking about a homegrown player who, you know, supported the club since he was a kid, you know, ostensibly gives everything, you know. To me, that feels like an odd player to then target. I mean, he's an interesting one because there are a lot of moving parts. You know, it's not just necessarily what's best for... you know, what we think is best for the team. It might come down to what he thinks is best for his career. As you say, it comes down to potentially who the manager is. And also, you know, the best thing for the club in a broader sense, in that he is one of the few players you'd say probably has a decent value. So it's whether they cash in. But yeah, I certainly wouldn't be in a hurry to sell him if you're talking about just what's best for this team rather than necessarily what's best for him or for the club, because I think he's a really useful player to have. I think he does an effective job most of the time.
So we've got Winks as a keep with those caveats. The next two are really, really easy and shouldn't require too much discussion. Tanguy Ndombele and Pierre-Emile Højbjerg. I think Spurs would have to be in financial mess to have to sell either of those guys.
We can really save us some time on this already overrunning podcast by just saying we'll keep those two players and then move on, right?
Yeah. They've been really good. They've both got 4 years left on their contracts. I'm sure they could probably, you know, they're two of the few players Spurs could probably sell at a profit if they wanted to. One other midfielder I want to touch on quickly is Oliver Skipp, who's having a really good season on loan at Norwich City. You know, he's been one of the best midfielders in the Championship. They're going to get promoted. Charlie, would you loan him back to Norwich next year for a year of Premier League games, or would you have him in and around the Spurs squad?
I guess... maybe that's a slight complication with Winks as well, as to whether you think it's a slight either or. I don't think it necessarily does have to be, but yeah, I mean, you know, a bit of a cop out, but depends on the competitions. I mean, Skip is someone who will be ready 100% to be playing Premier League football next season. So it's whether you think he'd be best doing that with a Norwich, assuming they go up, or with another Premier League team. I mean, there'll be plenty of interest in him, no question. Or whether he, you know, would be better served at Tottenham, playing fewer Premier League games but playing more in the cups with them, playing more in the Europa. I can really see either there. But again, he's someone who most certainly has a long-term future at the club. You know, he's one of the most exciting of those young guys coming through.
Another one is Giovanni Lo Celso. Not had as good a season this year as he did last year. He's been really in and out of the team with fitness and various other injury issues. I'm sure they could get quite a lot of money if they wanted to sell him, because he's got 4 years left in his deal, Argentina international, all the rest of it. I really like him as a player and I'd keep him. Charlie, what do you reckon?
Yeah, he's someone I was thinking about in the context of feeling vaguely optimistic about a top four push. I think he could make quite a big difference. He is someone who can actually move Spurs up the pitch. So I feel like him coming back, assuming he stays fit for the rest of the season, could be quite big in that regard. Yeah, I would keep him. I mean, I think this season, as you say, has been injury affected, but I still think he's got a lot to offer.
I have to admit, you know, having kind of bigged him up just before the first lockdown this time last year as being like the only good thing about Spurs in that sort of early part of 2020. Since the restart in June, he's had so few. I mean, I know he said like a lot, you know, he's barely played really. He's had so few good moments. Obviously, there's a goal against City just after he came on. He's had so few good performances. If they did get a bid, and obviously the fact that he's had so few good performances probably massively reduces the chances of that. He would be one I would consider flogging if there was a decent bid, just because they've had good moments this season without him in the team, without him in the system. And it just kind of feels to me like if you get a £45 million bid from someone, and I'm not saying that is going to happen because I can't really think which kind of club that would be, he might be one I would consider letting go, because you do have a lot of, you know, options in midfield, and especially if you're going to end up playing 4-3-3, which is another thing I know we'll come on to. But if you are, and I know some people will think this is mad, if you're keeping Winks and Ndombele, Højbjerg, and Skip, do you need Lo Celso as well? And, you know, and then there's Dele Alli and whatever else. So I just, and maybe you sign someone. I'm just not 100%. I'm certainly not as convinced as I was a year ago.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. I don't think he's necessarily unsellable, although I do really like him and I don't want Tottenham to sell him. But you're right that if, I don't know, Atletico Madrid, whoever, came in with big money and Spurs can make their money back, and it means they could, you know, invest that money in a right back or other positions of the team that need strengthening, then I'd say, yeah, maybe I can see the argument for it. So let's say, let's put him down as a keep, but again, with the caveat that there is a case for selling. Sissoko, 2 years left. I think he's been okay this year, but he's not really in the first team, and I'm not sure. Do Tottenham need him medium term? I don't know.
There is going to come a point in Sissoko. He turns 32 this summer. He's got 2 years left on his contract. He's a better player technically than people give him credit for, but he doesn't rely a lot on that like engine.
Yeah,
particularly with the way Spurs have used him playing centrally. And there is going to come a point where that is that engine is going to fail.
And start spluttering.
I think he's going to decline quite quickly when that happens.
That's when they'll sell him to West Ham.
he might be one to be quite happy to see go to West Ham. He would be one I think I would try and sell if they can get, you know, £15 million for him, which again, I don't think is unrealistic. I don't know where that would be. But I think that would be quite a sensible option.
Yeah, I'm always wary of it a little bit because we, you know, you don't want to underestimate these players, but I do feel certainly as he heads towards the end of this contract, so the following 2 years, I would question how much better he would be. Certainly, you know, there's someone like Ollie Skip, who obviously has far less experience, but, you know, who we think is going to develop. In which case, do you really need someone like Sissoko around when you've got young players coming through who it's potentially delaying their development when those minutes are going to someone like Sissoko, who you think is probably on the decline? Yeah, I think if they got a reasonable offer, then I think you move on. And you know, he's been very good for them. He's played an important role, but I certainly don't think he's indispensable.
Okay, so we've got Sissoko as a sell. What about, here's an interesting one, Dele Alli.
It's such a difficult one, isn't it? I mean, and again, this is kind of tied in with who the manager is, because if it is Mourinho, I mean, I think we know fairly definitively that he would like to sell him for the money to reinvest. God, that is a horrible question, that, isn't it? I think under a different manager, if you're asking me, I would want him to stay.
Right.
If Mourinho is the manager, I think he will go. If someone else is the manager, I think I imagine he'll probably stay, because it seems like Levy is keen for him to stay. So this is the one where it feels more like kind of what we say is almost irrelevant.
Yeah,
like it's going to be like decided one way or the other.
Yeah, totally.
So if I was the new manager and I had the ear of the chairman, I would say, Daniel, Mr. Levy, sir, we should keep Dele Alli.
That is an all or nothing documentary I would watch. Tottenham managed really by James Moore. For a season, and the Amazon cameras are allowed in.
Give the fans what they want.
Yeah. There's a new JM in town. Yeah, Delhi is... yeah, I think James sums it up well there. I mean, it's interesting now looking at it, isn't it? When you think about, again, just talking about like Doherty and the challenges of bringing in players at the right time. Delhi's one who now, you know, you think given how the last couple of years have panned out, how much they could have sold him for. And you could say that's, you know, he's just been mismanaged. But now you get far less for Dele Alli than you would have one or two years ago. So then it's, do you stick and hope to get his value back up or just hope to get the best out of him? I don't know. Again, like with Harry Winks, and you think, you know, what's best for all parties here. For Dele Alli, if I'm looking at this with my kind of my England supporter hat on, then maybe I'm thinking he looks like a player who could do with a fresh start. But obviously, if you're talking just in the interest of Tottenham, then that's a slightly different conversation. But yeah, with Mourinho still in charge, it might just be best to say, you know, you've had an amazing time, but this just isn't working anymore, and we'll hope to get some money. But I'd be so curious to know what Dele Alli would bring in a, you know, COVID 2021, you know, compared to what he would have done 2-3 years ago.
It's difficult with someone like that because, you know, there are probably clubs who would want to sign him who he wouldn't want to join, if you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like he would only really be interested in joining, like, kind of, you know, PSG upwards. Whereas the clubs who want to sign him might be sort of...
Leeds.
Well,
Everton. I was going to say like sort of Marseille or someone, but, you know...
I just don't know what his level is. Like, I don't know. Is he a Champions League level player? He should be playing for a Champions League giant. Should he be on a kind of like scrappy Premier League mid-table team? I genuinely don't know the answer to that question.
Well, we talked about this like near the start of the season, didn't he? Like who would he join if he left Spurs? And we kind of got... Jack offended me by saying he'd kind of go to Southampton and be Danny Ings' sort of backup. I mean,
partner in crime. He'd be his like...
I mean, he's, you know... 3 years ago, he's one of the best players in the Premier League. Or 2 years ago, 3 years ago, he's one of the best players in the Premier League. I mean, it's crazy. I think you just got to be careful to not judge a player on form rather than kind of overall ability.
That's like, I kind of like generally agree with that in principle. But in the specific case of Dele Alli, I might ask when he was last good.
I mean, yeah, I wonder if Dele Alli looks at Jesse Lingard. You know, he's gone to West Ham. Probably, you know, they're quite comparable. I know a lot of people say, like, oh, Dele...
Stop trying to sell these players to West Ham.
Yeah, and I'm really pushing that West Ham. But I mean, I'm sure Dele Alli would have felt, you know, like we all would have done. You know, a loan to West Ham would have been very beneath Dele Alli. But Jesse Lingard has done that. And Lingard, I'm sure people say he's nowhere near Dele Alli's level, but, you know, they're comparable. They were both starters for England at the last World Cup. Jesse Lingard was a very, very good Premier League player, and he's gone to West Ham, and he's got himself back in that England team and squad by playing for them and being really, really good. So I don't know if... It's a really hard one, because once you make that move to a club like West Ham, unless you absolutely smash it, then all of a sudden that's your level. Okay, so now you're a kind of West Ham level player. Or are you better off going to a Champions League team? I don't know. Someone like Lille, but at least you're then in the Champions League, and even if you don't absolutely shine, well, you're still a Champions League player. So I don't know. I mean, I think it can go one of two ways, because you can drop down and then you just kind of get swallowed up by the Everton-ness or whatever of wherever you are. So it's a really tough one for Dele Alli, and I have wondered with him whether he's someone, if he needs to be surrounded by really, really good players and kind of part of that system, or whether he would be good enough to do what Lingard is doing and kind of lift a team up to his level. It'd be really interesting to see that.
One other point I want to make on Dele and Winks is COVID. It's the reality of COVID is that teams have less money than they used to, I think. Oh, obviously. And that means we're going to see a depressed transfer market this summer because no one's had any fans for the last year. And that's not to say they won't spend at all, but I think they'll generally be looking at, you know, loans, frees, very young players, very old players. Whereas someone like Dele and Winks, who are kind of not peak age yet, but approaching peak age and have lots of time left in their contract, are England internationals, that makes them like premium priced players. And it's a really bad time to be a premium priced player who's got time left in his contract, who has no real control over his future, and who wants a bit of a say in where you go. Because clubs, you know, no one's going to offer Daniel Levy what he wants, I imagine. So I think we've seen that a lot in football in the last year or so, is that moves that normally you would think would happen don't happen. And even clubs are scared of making managerial changes because they sense that it's not really worth the churn and the expense of doing it. So I wonder whether COVID might keep Dele at Spurs. I don't know. I'm just speculating, but it's just a thought I've had.
No, I think that's really interesting, and I don't expect many people to have sympathy for Daniel Levy, but you can see why it must be pretty frustrating for him in that you tie down these English players to long contracts. And in normal times, that is almost a guarantee that you're going to be able to sell them for big, big money. And then this unprecedented thing happens. And as you say, Jack, the picture has changed so much for someone like Winks or Dele with what a team is going to pay. Because, you know, a few years ago, if say Winks was out of favour, but he's still an England international with a long contract, all the Premier League clubs were so cash rich. You know, if you think teams like Crystal Palace were spending like north of 30 million on players like Benteke, I think. So yeah. you would have got someone coming in and paying like a big fee. You know, Dele Alli, we'd be talking way more, but you know, if we're saying Winks wasn't getting games, you'd get a huge bid from another Premier League club. And we're just not going to see that in this climate.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the team's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham, all new, Thursdays on FX, stream on Hulu.
So let's rattle through these kind of not mixed ability attacking players. Stephen Bergwijn, 4 years left, had a good spell earlier in the season, but now has completely dropped off the radar. James, would you loan him out?
Yeah, I think so. Loan him out. He looks like totally bereft of confidence, and he is definitely one where I think like dipping in and out of a team isn't helping him. And I think if they can, let's not say Palace again. let me look at the Premier League table. Let's say, Leeds. Leeds would be good. I mean, I guess he wouldn't get in the team there, would he, maybe?
I think he might. Even a Champions League club abroad, but I guess that maybe defeats the point you want him in the Premier League.
Maybe a bit, yeah. Or like a Villa or someone, maybe. I don't know. Someone of that sort of level, like a sort of decent, like sort of semi-ambitious mid-table club who are going to try and play good football. I'm going to say West Ham.
He's not as good as Jared Bowen.
If you get him alone, let's not get started on him. If he goes out on loan, plays regularly in the Premier League, gets his confidence back, and then you can kind of... basically, you're either saying, come back to Tottenham and be in a team, or sell for possibly even a slight profit on what they paid for him a year ago. That seems like the best solution there.
Yeah, I thought...
Sort of a loan with an open mind, let's say.
I hadn't thought, like, until you guys were discussing it on the pod a couple of weeks ago, and you were talking about a loan for Bergwijn. It's not something I thought of. I mean, I think I would still keep him, and I think you would say to a manager, whoever it is, look, we've bought this guy for 25, 30 million. We think he's, you know, we bought him because we think he's a really talented young player. I think it's, you know, up to the manager to try and get the best out of him. And I think he's shown enough to suggest that with a run of games, he can be really effective. So I would say keep him. And
but is he going to get the run of games there? That's the point. He's looked better on the left as well, right?
But I don't think it changes so quickly, doesn't it? I mean, a few weeks ago, we would have been saying like, oh, Lucas Moura, when's he ever going to play? And then all of a sudden, he's now like seemingly one of the most important attackers. And I think Bergwijn, similarly, you know, there was a period where he wasn't scoring, but he was a really important cog when Spurs went on the best run they've had this season. So I don't think it's beyond the realm of possibility he'll come back into the team. Even, you know, he may not even go to the Euros, given that he's barely playing for Tottenham. I suspect he still will, but I think it could change very quickly. Gets a run of games, is in the team, and then you're like, oh yeah, we've got a really exciting young attacking talent.
Okay, so next up, Lucas Moura, who I think is playing really well at the moment, as consistently as he's played for a while. I would keep him, personally.
I mean, yeah, as Charlie alluded to, actually, he would be, if we'd had this conversation kind of 3 or 4 weeks ago, he'd be one I would say sell, and I'd be saying keep Lamella. But now, actually, in spite of that goal the other week, I would probably, like, and he has a year in his contract, Lamella, I'd sell Lamella. I think you'd, someone would sign him for 15 million quid, that sort of, that kind of ballpark, and keep Lucas.
But I wonder if now's a good time to sell Lucas in the sense that his stock is pretty high. This is a player who's been, who's pretty up and down, but the recency bias of the fact that he's been good over the last few months might convince a team in Europe that, you know, oh yeah, Lucas Moura, he's a really good player, and you might be able to get more from him, more for him than, you know, you necessarily would for other players. So I that might seem counterintuitive, possibly, given that he is playing well at the moment, but I wouldn't rule it out, because I think there might be teams in Europe who quite like the look of Lucas.
I can see the logic there, but I guess Lamella is kind of another player who's sort of good for a month, then kind of at best inconsistent for sort of 3 or 4 months, and then kind of has another good month and then kind of falls away again and gets an injury and whatever. He's sort of a similar sort of, you get a similar sort of return for Lamella. I'm just thinking, if he's got 1 year left, assuming you're not going to give him another new contract, it might just be logical to kind of cash in on him now. And Lucas with 3 years left. I mean, I know that is kind of counterintuitive, because you probably get more money for him. I think he might be a year younger as well.
Yeah, Lamella's a year older, so I wonder if the problem with that is teams might be with Lamella, like, well, he's not someone we're desperate for. We'll just wait it out a year rather than giving a fee for him. Whereas Moura, you might be able to actually get a reasonable fee. He's 28. Someone might.
I'm looking at Serie A again. I mean, Inter, someone there will pay £15 million for Lamella.
I'd sell Lamella. I love Lamella, but I don't really see the point of him still being at Tottenham, Rabona aside.
Yeah, he's great fun, but like, and then red cards. I mean, I really like Lamella, and he's another player I've defended who's, and I think the criticism of him has been possibly slightly more fair. Is it really in anyone's interest for Lamella to kind of be the fringe player for another season and, you know, score 3 goals, have a couple of good moments? I'm just not really sure that this is caveat with whether or not they're in Europe and if they get a bid, but I think broadly speaking, I would say he'd be one to sell.
Gareth Bale on loan. I'd love to have him back at Spurs, even though he said he was going back to Real Madrid. James, you've got to keep him, haven't we?
It is another one of those where it depends who the manager is, but again, if the manager is me, I would keep him, because I'd be like, you know, arm around the shoulder, I'd GM up.
Also, the fans deserve to see him.
So yeah, I'd keep Bale.
But only if you're in charge. There is that caveat.
What I think might happen is, if they change manager, Bale will sign like on deadline day.
Yeah.
I think that'll like, he won't like, that won't get kind of renewed.
No.
So he can be there all for a pre-season. It'll be, you know,
it's too much money involved. Levy, yeah.
Rightly or wrongly, kind of strong-arming Madrid over the course of the summer to try and get the best possible deal and get them to stump up as much of those wages as he possibly can. So if Gareth Bale is a Tottenham player next season, I don't think it'll be before sort of the last week of August.
Yeah, I completely agree. Charlie, would you keep him?
I don't think so. I mean, just speaking maybe from, you know, take the emotion out of it. I think those the amount you're having to pay him, I think that those funds could be better diverted elsewhere, especially as if it is going to be something that bleeds into, you know, deadline day and all of that stuff, then I just think it's a distraction you could do without.
I mean, that is the big problem with it. I think if you can get him in there for a decent, not be paying him stupid money, which obviously is impossible, and to be there from the start of pre-season to actually kind of be fit and sharp and ready for the start of the season, that is a completely different thing, isn't it? But I just don't think there's a world in which that happens.
Yeah, I just think it's all too complicated.
That is the big reservation about it. But that month of him being in the team and being very good, maybe I'm too emotional, but it was so good and it made it so fun in comparison to kind of what had been either side of it, that I would like to make that happen again.
The fans deserve to see Bale. Like, the whole, not just 2,000 fans or 5,000 fans, but the whole stadium deserves to see Gareth Bale playing for Spurs. Maybe that sounds a bit sentimental, but it's what I think. So I'm keeping Bale. Now, last few. Son. Let's do Son quickly. So Son has got 2 years left in his contract. They've definitely spoken about a new contract. I don't think it's very far away. Obviously, nothing has been announced yet. Let's wait and see what happens over the summer. I don't think anything will be announced until the end of the season. I suppose you could cash in on Son if you wanted to, but he's just too good. He's too good to sell, isn't he?
Yeah, it'd be ludicrous to sell him. He's in a similar sort of situation. You know, we're talking about Dele Alli, but it's more extreme with Son because he's a couple of years older. And I guess we'll have this conversation with Kane as well. In fact, we did the other week. But, you know, Levy is going to want upwards of £100 million for Son with 2 years on his contract, I would imagine. I mean, who's got money? Yeah. Normally we'd say Real Madrid or Barcelona, but they've not got money, have they? If you're Manchester City, say, I just think you're going to look, if you're going to spend £100 million, you're probably going to sign two guys who are not two guy. two kind of 21, 22-year-olds, like massively highly rated ones from the continent that are going to be like 50 million quid. And in all probability, with Pep as a coach, you're probably going to end up better off that way around. I like you were saying before, I'm not really sure it's the market for those kind of players. But bar the very, very top players, and you know, we talked about Mbappe and Haaland last week, that's going to make it very difficult for the other players to move, unless Dortmund decide they want to replace Haaland with Son. And he wants to go there, but
he doesn't quite fit their profile, does he? He's a bit too old, to sign for Dortmund.
Exactly, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you're right, James. He's at an age now where if you were to spend huge money on him, you'd have to be accepting, well, you're getting no resale value for that, really, because, you know, no one else is going to come in massively for players in their 30s, which he would be in a couple of years. Yeah, I mean, the contract thing's interesting, though, because, like, in November, it felt like it was imminent. You know, so I mean, hopefully it will, you know, it will just be sorted by the time the season ends. But I mean, yeah, it would be very, very brave to sell him given how catastrophic that would feel to be selling one of, you know, the jewels in that Tottenham squad.
Like, I think realistically, we know that whatever's happened this season, you know, and I think we're probably going to end up looking at it and saying it was not a massive success, even if they won the League Cup and finished fifth. I mean, that's as good as it's probably realistically going to get now, and I'm not really convinced it'll be that good. We're probably going to look back on the season and say it's not a massive success, but you can say if Son and Kane are in the team again next season, they will have a chance.
Yeah, for Champions totally. League,
and maybe even better than that. Like, they can get the rest of it right. And I just think, like, you know, it'd be such a massive gamble to sell one or other of those two with a view to kind of trying to fix the rest of it, because it's going to be so short at the other end. Like, what are the chances you're going to sell Son and replace him? Because what you need to do is replace him with a player who's as good for half the money, which isn't impossible, but I don't back Spurs to do that, because I just think it's incredibly difficult. So it would be madness to sell him, so you have to keep him. I'm surprised we talked this long about him.
I know, we're keeping Son, and we're keeping Kane. I mean, in part because I don't think, even if Spurs...
You mentioned West Ham now.
...needed 100... even if Spurs...
Yeah,
you know,
Everton is your West Ham.
I just don't think they can generate the money for him, even if they wanted to, and they don't. They don't want to sell him.
Yeah,
I'm sure he might. I'm sure in an ideal world for Kane, he might want to go to Manchester City, but I don't think it's going to happen. I might be proven very wrong in August, but this is just what I think.
There's going to be loads of noise about this. There's going to be a lot of posturing. Mm. And obviously, it's not impossible, he goes, clearly. But I think for the same reasons we've talked about with those other players, it's going to be very difficult for Harry Kane to leave Spurs this summer. I think it's going to take a pretty monumental shift at one of those clubs for that to happen. I just don't see, you know, say Man City would have to miss out on, you know, Aguero would have to leave and then have to miss out on Haaland and Mbappe. And then suddenly kind of get towards the end of them and realise they really, really need a forward, and the one they want to sign is Harry Kane. But I'm just not convinced. You know, Man City have so rarely over the last decade, 13 years or whatever it's been, like, gone out and signed a genuinely properly elite player, that one of the best players in that position, the very, very best players in the world. I mean, Aguero is kind of like on the upward curve. I mean,
City have never.
Yaya maybe might be the one who you say was the closest to that, but even then, I mean, I don't think, like. But he was kind of one of the worst, kind of. I mean, this is a high bar. One of the worst 2 or 3 players in that Barcelona team. It wasn't deemed one of the very best players in the world before he went to City.
Yeah, City have bought. If you look at City's biggest fees, so this is slightly off topic, but they spent a lot of, you know, 30 to 60 million pounds. They've got a team full of 30 to 60 million pound players. But Coxie did a good piece the other day on the 20 biggest transfers of all time. I don't think there were any City players in there. City never ever pay 70 plus, kind of because they don't need to, and they don't buy that kind of late 20 bracket.
It's clearly totally different if you can get Haaland or Mbappe for £120 million this summer.
Yeah, it is.
Because £120 million is obviously the new 60, so it's like, that is worthwhile. But to sign Harry Kane, who's 28 this summer.
Yeah, he will be, yeah.
Yeah.
And has these occasional ankle injuries, which obviously we will ham up now if Man City is sniffing around. Mm-hmm. It does feel like a risk. And, you know, we've seen what happened with Hazard at Real Madrid, who obviously is a couple of years older when he left. But I mean, that is completely like hamstrung Real Madrid.
Totally, yeah, totally.
Excuse the pun. It's just like completely crippled them in the transfer market, isn't it? Because they've invested so much money in a player, and I know obviously circumstances outside the club have dictated that too. But the fact that they've not had any return from him on the pitch is just complete. They're just like, it just left them with absolutely nothing to do in the transfer market. No wiggle room at all.
Completely. So we're keeping Kane. And I think that's kind of it. So our squad for next season.
What about Big Vinny? We've not got to Big
Vinny. Oh, Big Vinny. Yeah, I keep him. I love him. We haven't got time to talk about him, but whatever it takes, I'd sell Kane to keep Vinicius.
That's a non-negotiable for Jack if he was to take over.
No, I don't know. I'd find a way.
That's another one. Actually, that'll be at the end of the transfer window.
Yeah, like last day.
It'll come back right at the end of the...
Fine. Be like 18 million or something. Okay, so we're keeping Vinicius, right? I mean, who else? You're not going to get anyone better to do that job. It's a hard job being the backup.
Yeah, if you get him... If they're in Europe and you get him for £15 million, which, will, like you say, will inevitably be end of August, then...
Yeah,
I see that happening. Yeah.
The thing is, Spurs will get on the last day, by which point they will have already dropped points, and it will be like, well, because Kane will have been injured, and then they'll have had Lucas up front for the first few games of the season, and they'll be like, oh, why didn't you sign Vinicius when you could have done? Anyway, so that concludes this exercise. We actually could talk about Mourinho, but we've been speaking about 3 hours, and I don't think, you know, we could speak another 3 hours about Mourinho. We've spoken enough about Mourinho in the last this season.
So I don't think Mourinho's underrepresented in the media.
So we've got Lloris, Hartdog, Dyer, probably Toby, Roden, Tanganga, Aurier, probably Winks, Højbjerg and Ndombele, Skip maybe, depending on the Winks situation, maybe Lo Celso and Neto's a bid, Lucas, Son and Kane, and then out the door we've got Sanchez, Rose, Doherty on loan, Sissoko, maybe Dele, Bergwijn on loan and Lamella. I feel like there's, you know, all is not lost with Tottenham Hotspur. They could, you know, they've got some good players there for next season. Good midfielders in peak age, good experienced strikers. Everything's going to be okay, I promise.
Bergwijn staying is my non-negotiable if I'm going to...
Bergwijn staying is the non-negotiable.
Well, let's say on the basis of the things we've all said, then who do the listeners want to be manager out of the three of us?
Ooh, yeah, that's good.
Yeah, tweet us. Please tweet us your... tweet us, let us know what you think, if we've missed anyone, I hope not, or if you just massively did disagree with anything we've said, just, tweet us, leave a comment, DM. We'll try and follow up on some of that next week. Next week's podcast will be coming a few days later than usual because of Easter, where we will be looking back on the Newcastle United away game, which of course is on Easter Sunday. Thank you very much to everyone who stuck with us for the entirety of this podcast. Thank you very much to James and producer Tom and to Charlie. Great to see you again. Looking forward to seeing you again soon. And we'll be back next week. All the best.
The Athletic.